eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
And welcome to Eat, Drink, Talk, the podcast that is the most watched in this Louisville area, covering the city's restaurants and bars. My co-host here is Steve Coombs. Steve, welcome to the show.
Happy New Year.
It was happy.
2 days back.
It's a very happy time. A lot of new things are going on. People are excited about starting something new. And I'm excited about continuing something that's 35 shows in now.
I know it. We're rolling. It's profitable.
It's really cool. We got a lot of news to get to. First, we want to mention our sponsors. The first is Eye Care Institute down there on Story Avenue, 502-589-1500. I just had my LouisvilleKY.com contributor Jackie Bentley into the studio, and she took me up on the offer. She made appointments for her three kids down there at Eye Care Institute. This is a great time of year to do that.
Well, I'm going to be doing that in the next week or so because that FSA money is now available again. Woohoo!
There you go. Talk about new things for the new year.
Need 2017. Need to get those trifocals adjusted.
All right, and of course we're happy to have Harvest as
Harvest
a sponsor as well.
Absolutely. Elevated hyper-local food prepared by Chef Patrick Roney's team. Come to the table at 624 East Market. Call 384-9090 for reservations or make your own online at harvestlouisville.com. And don't forget, Thursday, they're doing the three-course Thursdays. It's a great menu, great bargain for $30.
I'm glad to hear they're continuing that in the new year. That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Steve, you know, it's the first of the year, and our site and our podcast is all about delivering news about the industry. You've already bit off some this morning.
That's right. So Meridian Cafe had its last breakfast and lunch service over the weekend, over the holiday weekend, and it's closed. And it will open, kind of reopen, as it were, in a space called the Melrose Cafe, which is in Goshen. Just when you're climbing the hill out of Prospect on Highway 42, it's right there at the top of the hill.
It's out there, but there's a lot of people out there that need to eat.
There's nothing out there to eat. There's one restaurant, two actually, in the same strip where she is, a really average Chinese place, and another place called Burning Bush, which is not a competitor at all. But so with Kristen Foltz's move out there, that leaves a vacancy in the Meridian Cafe, and that is going to be filled by El Taco Luchador, which is the taqueria owned by the Olay Restaurant Group on Baxter Avenue, but they've got a lot of architectural work to do to turn this into a really full-fledged restaurant. So that's going to take some time. Well,
I look forward to, you know, a Mexican concept in there. There's so many options in St. Matthews in that little area.
That's right. There are two other taquerias to battle, I guess, however it's pronounced.
Yeah, we had lunch
there
one day.
And the other one is we also went to the Ville Taqueria, which is by Bluegrass Brewing Company. So there's a Mexi battle happening there.
There you go. There's a lot of them around town. So that's good. But, you know, right before the break on Eat, Drink, Talk, the website, Steve, you reported on the closing of Hillbilly Tea. And, you know, you had your reasons for that it went down, that it did not succeed, involving Carter Lewis, and made clear your opinion on the site, and that got quite a bit of reaction, right?
It did. I wrote what I like to call a post-mortem on these, because and this won't be the last. We've had so many closings in the past year, and I anticipate many more coming this year. And I just kind of look at it and take my 35 years in the business and kind of analyze what happened. And the biggest problem with Hillbilly Tea was that it closed four times. So you have four openings, four closures. You know, one was in China. One was a miniature one on Baxter Avenue. And each time, Carter Lewis blamed outside circumstances as the reason why it closed.
Because we never blame ourselves. It's politics.
Certainly with him. And he never owned it. There was a really good Insider Louisville article that it just appeared the reporter gave him multiple chances to say, you know, I own this, and mm-hmm. I blew it. So part of that bothered me, and I know that investors have lost money. I have been told on the street from distributors that they have lost money because of unpaid bills.
A lot of employees.
80 would be my guess over the course of four concepts have lost their jobs from that. And I thought that was a bit outrageous.
Yeah.
And a lot of people said, you know, Coombs, you know, you're pretty good at kicking them while they're down. You know, why don't you criticize them when they're in operation? And that's something I really didn't understand. And you can certainly email me, Steve at Eat Drink Talk, to tell me why, if anybody thinks that that's a good idea to kind of thrash them while they're operating. I like to let them run their operations, and we tend to report on places that we think are really good. So if yours isn't getting reporting on, that may tell you something. But I'm not going to sit there and write a negative article telling you how bad your business is. People, you know, the paying customer can decide that with their own dollars.
Exactly. Well, it's good to know that there's people out there reading and listening. What do you think is going to happen with Carter Lewis? And there won't be a fifth trial, will it?
He said that Hillbilly Tea as a restaurant concept is done. Well, good. 0-4, so it probably should be done. You know, I've heard from several people that he's really super creative and intelligent and inspiring, but he just isn't good at the detail part of the game. So now he says he wants to start Hillbilly Hooch. And I'd said this in my article that, you know, getting into the distilling business is not wise for somebody who doesn't like details. It's an extremely detailed job. Plus, you've got the government who's going to make sure you're on top of all your details.
And right now, a whole lot of competition.
It's an expensive business. And as Paul Toole, our buddy over at Ballantine Whiskeys, will tell you, getting your bottle on the shelf is very, very difficult.
That's the big challenge.
And he's extremely skilled at it, too. So he still says it's hard. So I don't know how Hillbilly Hooch is going to do well. But anyway.
All right. Well, we'll be watching. But end of the year, you know, the last week of the year, there's not a lot going on. You wrote a piece, though, that did get some attention about the media and the local media here in town and
well, everywhere. The restaurants are so exciting right now, and everybody wants to cover them, and everybody wants to write about them. And in not enough cases, I don't want to say that, not every time they're doing a very good job of it, because they clearly don't know what they're talking about. And some of my criticism was toward local media, not all of it, because this happens everywhere. I read stuff from all over the country, and so many people get in and they can't pronounce the names of things. They can't explain cooking techniques. They can't detail what's in a cocktail. They just think, hey, it's fun. Come here. That's maybe not my style of reporting. It may work in some circles, but you know, we expect sports reporters to be extremely detailed in what they do. Political reporters, we expect them not to be biased. You know, we have high expectations, but for some reason, the food media gets passed. And I was just saying, I'm kicking my own butt in this regard. And suggesting that my colleagues and peers do the same, and that we raise the bar some.
Well, that's good advice. I would only add that probably a part of it, another part of it, is the lack of editing.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, most people are writing and publishing, and nobody else sees it until it goes out there.
Yeah, you're 100% right, Rick. I mean, if you don't have a gatekeeper to kind of remind you, you know, well, maybe this, you need to double check this fact. That's just the curse of our business right now. Staffs are so lean to be able to really make clean copy, as we like to call it.
Yeah, it's you know, it's tough, and a lot of mistakes get out there, and sometimes they don't get seen or corrected. You know, it's
right
nature of the business.
But interestingly, so if you want to even go look at my Facebook page, there were a lot of restaurant operators locally and nationally who just said, "Good job, it's exactly right." People need to know more about my business before they come asking me questions about it. So,
okay, and you also had some advice for the restaurateurs around town, and I think that went over well with most.
Yeah, that the improved service. I even had a lot of service staff people say, "Yeah, we could do a whole lot better." You know, we don't get a lot of guidance sometimes, or we don't get a lot of support. But I think that if Louisville wants to be a first-class restaurant market, we need to improve the service here. It was exactly the opposite 35 years ago when I was in the business. Service was outstanding. Food was okay. Now it's completely the other way. The food is great, but the service is lacking.
Yep.
And there are restaurants like Corbett's, for instance, where the service is just outstanding, but it's expensive to go there. So how do we bring that down to a smaller level and make service great everywhere? I think it's possible. I think it's very possible. We can do it.
Well, it's something great to think about as we head into a new year and thinking about things all new. Later in the show, we're going to get to my interview, which is with a brewer down at Gordon Biersch, Nicholas Lanners. But your interview for this week is?
Mike Vida. He is the chef, the executive chef, I should say, at Proof on Main. He really over the 21C Hotel, so he's got to be responsible for, you know, room service and snacks and the Proof Bar. And he is an out-of-towner. He's an Ohioan who has been all over the country and cooked at some of the finest restaurants in the country. And the dude's just got an impressive resume, but he's a super, super nice guy. And I thought it was time to step in and or sit down with him and chat a bit, especially after having been blown away by the Hog in the Barrel dinner a couple of months ago, you know, where they paired every course with Pappy Van Winkle. It was just awesome. Nice guy. I think he's got a great interview.
Well, good stuff. Well, let's take a listen to that, and Steve and I will be back with our favorites of the first week of the year.
Head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Rom.
Today, I'm with Matt Jones,
Kevin Harned, Pat Forty.
But I'm with Anoush Shariot, Crispin Wall,
United States Congressman John Yarmuth,
Sarah Brofancher, and Susie Eastman.
I have Kristen Boone,
one of St. Matthew's most favorite sons, Danny Flanagan.
It's Pat Day.
The list goes on and on. The most interesting people in the Ville are on the Rusty Satellite Show with Rick Redding. New episodes Thursdays on Louisville.am.
My guest this week is Mike Vada, the executive chef at Proof on Main. First time we've got to sit down and talk for any length of time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm glad to have you.
Absolutely.
Cleveland boy, right?
Youngstown, just hours south of Cleveland. So.
And you've been around to a lot of different restaurants that I'm sure people might recognize if they're maybe Food Network fans or readers of Bon Appetit. Talk about some of the places where you've been, like Gordon Ramsay's place.
Yeah, so got out of culinary school in Pittsburgh and quickly went to New York City with Gordon Ramsay. Spent about 3 years with him.
Him or the company? I mean, were you directly under his?
No, so with Gordon Ramsay Holdings. So with it was Gordon Ramsay Restaurant at the London Hotel.
Right.
So,
what part of town is that in?
It's at 54th and 7th, right downtown.
Midtown action.
Yeah.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
So it was definitely a lot of fun there.
Obviously, was he as crazy as some people say?
You know, he's one of those guys that as long as you respect him, he respects you. You know, so a lot of things that you see on television are for ratings. If he was the guy that everyone portrays him as, I wouldn't have spent 3 years with him. So I learned a lot.
So Michael Mina Group, which restaurant in that group were you, did you work in?
So I started in Baltimore with Wit and Wisdom, and then ended up, I spent about 2 years with him there and then went on the road, and he needed a corporate sous chef. So I helped him do about 7 openings in just over a year.
Which is
a lot. So
that is, shaved, openings are brutal.
Yeah, shaved a little bit of time off my life, I think. had a lot of fun. And I learned a lot. You know, you really get to understand how to manage a wide variety of people, because the openings were anywhere from St. Petersburg, Florida, to Los Angeles, to San Francisco. So a lot of travel and a lot of great people along the way to learn from and to see progress and things like that. So.
And Craig Yeomain, as we were talking about.
Yeah, so
that's the subject of, or the chef, his name is?
Tony Moss.
Tony Moss is the subject of a book called The Back of the House, which I've listened to, and tough guy, as we were talking about, to work for.
Yeah, Tony's a great guy, super intimidating. You know, he's got huge, immense amount of skill, you know, in the kitchen. But in terms of, you know, seeing his leadership style and stuff like that, you know, it really shapes you to see, you know, what you want to do and what you don't want to do. And you have these chefs that you work for that are great leaders and great chefs. You take a little bit from each one and kind of like take that in and see, hone your own management style, if you will. You know, so it's good to go from Michael Mina or some restaurant Gordon Ramsay to Michael Mina in with Tony Moss and just see, you know, some of these grander chefs. But also somebody like Tony, who's a single chef proprietor,
right?
And see him hone his own skill or put his own life into this restaurant, you know, one sole restaurant versus Mina, who has 20-some restaurants,
yeah,
or Gordon Ramsay, another great empire, going overseas and things like that. So it's really great to see all these different chefs and, like, their own techniques. And
so how did you wind up in little old Louisville?
So I was in San Francisco finishing up some openings out there where I was based out of with Mina Group. And, you know, I'm a Northeast Ohio guy. I'm a Midwest guy. You know, I wanted to come back and get closer to my family. And had a friend that knew about Proof, and I'd heard about it before. And, you know, I really fell in love with Woodland Farm and the whole idea of farm to table and having that farm attached to the restaurant. So I came out here for a tasting, got to see the restaurant, really got attached to all the artwork inside the museum. And there was so much inspiration within just the walls itself. And then I got to see the farm and, you know, have that attachment to, you know, my childhood of growing up around farms and, you know, playing in a field and stuff like that, and like pulling vegetables out of the garden, and just really just fell in love with the place. Of like,
and this was 2 years ago, about that?
Yeah, so I'm about a year and 10 months right now.
Oh, wow.
Really fell in love with the idea of coming back to the Midwest and kind of, you know, cooking food back here again. I got sick of the California lifestyle and the idea of like anything's in season at any given time, you know?
Right.
I wanted to come back and, you know, really long for a tomato or get sick of the snow, which is going to happen pretty soon. So I just wanted to feel those things again. I think it's important, you know, to feel the seasons. So
it's only 4 hours drive home now, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to a 4 hours flight.
Yeah, exactly.
So, plus a couple hours from Columbus, I'm sure is how you got there. Yeah, I think it's unique that you're a hotel chef. You know, not everybody really understands that, given the responsibilities of room service and things like that, that can be almost around-the-clock job. So, like on Thanksgiving and Christmas, you guys are working because there are guests here. I
mean, yeah.
There's a party all the time, as it were.
For sure.
Do you mind that part of it, or do you?
You know, it's great. I mean, really interesting thing about the business model of 21C, and another thing that I really like enjoyed like coming into was where there's day there you can go weeks and feel like you're in an independent restaurant with these farmers coming in the door and doing these awesome dinners like we just did, but then at the end of the day you're in a hotel and you get all the benefits of having a hotel. You get to see the bigger numbers, you have these nice budgets, you have all these things, and you get to understand the things that you need to know as a chef of understanding bigger business. But at the end of the day, we were still bringing in whole animals. We have a farm attached to it with all these veggies pouring in the door. So it's great to see both sides of it. You know, we're approaching the holidays, and we're going to do all of these things for two. You know, we have we broke down a whole lamb, and we're doing lamb shoulder for two. We have a 30-ounce Cote de Boeuf we're going to do for two. We have
Just all big shareable plates?
Yeah, big shareable plates that are going to fall into the holidays.
Oh, nice.
Which is great, and that's something you would see in an independent restaurant. But we're attached to a hotel, and they're able to come in, you know, eat this big feast that we're going to prepare for them, and then walk upstairs and take a nap, you know. But I think it's a lot of fun, you know, and there's a lot of hotels that can't pull that off, you know, that... You know, we have full reign of our in-room dining menu, you know, and it very much follows suit with the appropriate breakfast, lunch, or dinner menu.
Right.
So there's a lot of cross-utilization off of our menus. So you're never going to find a club sandwich. I love a club sandwich, but you'll never find one on my menu, you know, because we're a very chef-driven restaurant.
Right.
That's changing. If we do, it's not going to be your average club sandwich. It's going to be our club sandwich that we want to do, you know.
Well, that brings about a good question. So I know some of the dishes have been carried over from Michael Paley, the first chef, to LaVon Wallace, the second chef, and now you. But what is your most recognizable impact on the menus, plural for sure, here at Proof?
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. I was just talking about this with somebody else. Like, I don't have anything that's necessarily stuck. You know, Michael Paley put the octopus on there. It's been great, and it's going to supersede, you know, myself into the next chef. And LaVon had some things on there that carried in, you know, to myself as well. And I don't know what my shtick is going to be that, you know, will fall, you know, supersede myself. You know, I had the only thing that hasn't really changed was the Pop-Tart. It's a chicken liver Pop-Tart that I put on the menu. And it's like, it's based on a childhood memory, but an adult version of a Pop-Tart. So you have, right now it's sweet potato filling with chicken liver mousse frosting. And we have chicken skin cracklings and chives for like the sprinkles to be playful on top, you know. So
how well does that sell?
It actually surprisingly sells really well. And I wasn't sure in the beginning. I was like, this is going to last a week and it's going to be the end of it.
How long has it been on the menu?
I put that on when I first got here. It was the first dish I put on the menu. So it's been over a year and a half. So almost 2 years it's been on the menu. So
we got to enjoy, at least I got to enjoy, you had to work for the Hog in the Barrel dinner a couple of weeks ago. And Proof does lots of those things. Are those inspirational opportunities for you to just to create, you know, at a higher level? I mean, you're pairing everything in that case with Pappy Van Winkle whiskey. You get to bring in Ashley Christensen, you know, the James Beard Award-winning chef to help you out. How much fun is that kind of stuff?
It's awesome, you know, and it's truly what this industry is all about, you know, where, like, as chefs, you can't always cook for yourself. You know, you're looking at the diner, but those dinners, you can really kind of get creative, and the audience is a little more open to what they're walking into. They may not even know the menu. They're just open to anything that falls on a plate, you know?
So, right.
And we're pairing with, you know, we're doing this fork and bottle series. We're getting paired with a lot of different, we're doing beer dinners, wine dinners, and whiskey dinners. And each one we're doing these pairings, and we're talking to distillers. We may bring in a guest chef. And it's really about the relationship more than anything, you know?
Between the restaurant and the customer, or the guests, or
I would say everybody, you know, just really like reining it all in, of like making it a smaller romantic setting for everybody, where it's like, you know, myself is talking to a distiller, we're getting up and talking to the guest, maybe I bring in a farmer and really talk about these things, you know. So and it's getting everybody a little more close-knit rather than just sitting in a dining room and, you know, food coming out, and hopefully I would come out, you know. But for these dinners, you know, we're coming out, we're explaining the courses, and we're getting through everything, you know, and really talking about the food and where it came from, and where how the beer was crafted. And I think it makes everything a little more romantic as a guest, and even for as a chef or a brewer or whatever it may be, you know. It just, you know, we got into this because, as chefs, because we like to see an expression, you know.
Right.
We're chefs are normally two things. We like instant gratification, and we're adrenaline junkies, you know. So when you do these dinners, it's great because you can be in the back and you know, really grind it out and do these specialty dinners, and then walk out front and really talk about the food that you've just created, you know. So,
well, speaking of romance, and last quick question, you know, chefs work on the holidays. You know, you don't get to see your loved ones very often, or maybe you have a girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
Right. So what are you going to do when you get off Christmas Day? Because I would imagine you're working, because there are guests here.
Yeah.
Are you going to go home, relax, and just like shut out the world, or are you going to go find some place to go to dinner?
So I think I'm probably going to do some type of large format roast, you know, that I can kind of pre-do. And then by the time I get home, we could carve it up. My family's going to come down, or my parents are going to come down from Ohio.
Oh, nice.
We can carve a nice roast and sit down and have a proper meal.
So you put it on some absurdly low temperature and just cook it slow all day?
Absolutely. So.
Oh, nice. Well, I guess that won't compare to me doing scratch pizza at my house for 14, but nonetheless, I'm sure it's going
to
be great.
Well, maybe you can bring the pie to my house, and I'll go to your house, and we'll all put it together.
Mike Vida, so good to finally sit down with you and do this interview. Thanks for being a guest on Eat, Drink, Talk.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Alec Bowles, co-host of the What Happens Next podcast on Louisville.am. We talk about improv each week with We Are the Louisville Improvisers. With,
yeah, totally.
With Chris Anger and Brian Hines.
Yeah.
And Jenny.
Where's my water?
Okay. Well, right now we're just having a few treats. So we hope you can listen. Find us at Louisville.am in iTunes or using the Stitcher app on your iPhone or Android device.
And we are back. How did you like that interview with Mike Vida?
He's a very interesting cat. I've got a... You know, another one on my list to go down and check out.
Yeah, super nice guy. He took me down to the cellar below 21C Hotel where they're doing their charcuterie and curing. I mean, there's a full bourbon barrel full of hot peppers, like habaneros, and they're making their own vinegars, and it's just cool. It's some of the fun stuff that they're doing in these places.
Well, that whole building's cool, of course. If you've been down to 21C, it's fun to just walk around. It's fun to go to the bathroom there.
Yeah.
it's really got everything.
It makes you do a double take if you're a guy. I don't know about the ladies, but yeah, you can see things.
All right, our favorite part of the show is when we talk about all the cool things we get to eat and drink around town. And Steve, why don't you start us off with your favorite meal of New Year's week?
So my favorite eat was at La Chasse. That's just a fantastic restaurant. It's buttoned up. I mean, from everything about it works. The cocktails are great. The bar program's great. The food's great. The service is great, period. And I've had this dish twice, I think, and it's the marinated pan-seared octopus with lemon thyme aioli. I mean, Chef Alexander Delaney just really has a touch with anything and everything. But octopus can be really super tough. This is just so tender and flavorful and good Greek food, basically.
Octopus.
Yeah.
That's a treat, I'm sure. I went on Friday night with Paula out to Silvio's in St. Matthews. I don't know if you folks are familiar with that place, but it's kind of tucked away in
right across the street from Trinity, right?
Yeah, right across the street from Trinity High School.
Was where Super Chefs was next door to.
Exactly. And it's an Italian place. It is it's just outstanding. It's kind of small, but the service, we were talking about service earlier, is spectacular.
That's always good to hear.
But you know, I guess the thing that really took us, I'd heard it by reputation. I knew kind of what I wanted, but the chef came by and stopped at our table and spent it was crowded, but he still spent a good, you know, good 5 to 8 minutes talking with us, making recommendations on the menu.
Nice. And,
you know, baked ziti is the dish there. It's the specialty there.
That's what he was saying?
That's what he was saying. Nice. He said, you'll love it. It's got some spicy sausage in it. It's really good. Plus, I'll just mention this. He recommended the salmon for Paula. And Paula, who eats salmon's one of her favorite things. She said it's the best she'd ever had.
So, nice. That's got to go on my list.
Yeah, there you go. You got to get just by there.
Right, it's down the street from my office.
It's really cool. So, did you have something good to drink there?
Of course, of course. I had two cocktails, but I had to choose one to talk about as my favorite, and it was called the Normandy Jam, as in J-A-M. And the reason why that was, it was a Calvados, which is an apple brandy cocktail with fig jam and port. And you think about it, it's like, boy, that's a lot of flavors going on. Do I really want to try it? It's like, yeah, it sounds crazy enough to be good. Isaac Fox, who is the owner and an exceptional cocktailer, did the cocktail. It was
great on this show.
Awesome. Awesome drink. The Normandy Jam. Highly recommended at La Chasse.
Well, there you go. That sounds great. You know, I wrote a piece on eDrink Talk about all the great events going on New Year's Eve around town with independent restaurants. And you know, it's a big night, I guess, for them. But a lot of people like to go right in their neighborhood, and that's sort of what I did. We went over to Louie Louie's, and you know, nothing fancy about it, but the champagne toast at midnight is an experience, and you want to do that with the right people around you and the right atmosphere. They had a band going; it was great.
I'm impressed you stayed up that late. I know I was probably in the rack by 10 on New Year's Eve.
Oh, I'm a party animal, man. We were going strong at midnight, and the band was playing. It was just cool. Like I said, it's a neighborhood place. A lot of people I talked to, if they were going out, they were going out somewhere close to where they lived, or
walking. Yeah, probably.
So that was a ball. We had a lot of fun doing that. So
awesome.
Anyway, before we get to Nicholas Lanners, let's talk about our sponsor. Steve, you got an update.
We have an update. Yeah, right in the middle of the show. So from Harvest down in Nulu, again, the elevated hyperlocal food prepared by Patrick Roney's team. Call 384-9090 for reservations or make your own online at harvestlouisville.com. But don't do it this week until Friday, because we've been told by one of the owners that they're doing some front of the house maintenance, and so the restaurant is closed until then, which I'm sure is a nice rest for that hard work staff over the holidays.
I need a break.
Yeah,
most people get that break between Christmas and New Year's, but the restaurant industry, that's their busiest time.
That's right. Oh yeah, that's the time to perform. So don't go there until Friday, which would be today's the 3rd, and that would be the 6th, right?
Exactly.
That's right.
That works out. Our other sponsor, of course, we're very happy to have Eye Care Institute on the show as a sponsor. 502-589-1500, right down there on Story Avenue. If you have any issues with your eyes and need to get a checkup, there's the place to go. Call and make an appointment, and they'll take care of you. They got great customer service down there at Eye Care Institute.
But speaking of needing a beer, that leads us to our next interview, yours, with Nicholas Lanners at Gordon Beers.
I didn't realize until I did this interview that there is something called a beer school. And there's a couple of them in the country. One is up by Chicago, and Nicholas Lanners is a proud graduate.
Wow, that's a serious one up there.
Yeah, and he also played tuba in a beer band in Cincinnati, so, and has a chemistry degree.
He's an entertaining guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Oh, yeah. I like
He's
him.
He's a lot of fun. He took me around back to see where the magic is done. They got a couple of bourbon barrels in the back. They got beer.
Right, right.
It's all good.
So they go a little bit off board there.
Yeah, for a national chain, they do a lot of local stuff too. And so I was very interested in talking with Nicholas over at Gordon Biersch, and we had a beer and had a conversation, and here it is.
I'll even, just before you do that, I'll add just a little bit about Gordon Biersch. I've been in several of them around the country, and I think a lot of people give chains a hard time. I think Gordon Biersch is a fantastic chain. They do a great job. You want to know what a correct style beer tastes like? Go to Gordon Biersch and learn the baseline.
Yeah, they've got, I think, always a minimum of 8 locally made beers on tap.
And well-made beers.
So it's all good. And participate in a lot of local events. So yeah. So it's a good place to go. If you have to go, if you go down there on 4th Street Live, stop in and see Nicholas there at Gordon Biersch. Here he is.
Dessert? Yes, please.
And happy new year to you, Nicholas Landers.
Thank you
for joining me on the show.
Yeah, it's I guess, you know, fun to be on the first one for the new year.
That's right. It is going to be fun. And I've just learned a bunch of stuff about you. Very interesting background. You somehow got into beer, something involving tuba.
Yes, tuba. I was going to the University of Cincinnati. I was playing tuba there. And it was right after my freshman year, I get this call on the phone of a guy whose name was actually Howard Hughes, not the famous Howard Hughes,
not that,
but, you know, another one. But he was an accordion player, and he had a beer band, the Cincinnati Beer Band in Cincinnati, and looking for tuba players, and I guess he called up University of Cincinnati, and the band director gave him my name, which I thought was interesting, because, again, I was only 19 years old at the time. But
You were already familiar with beer, I'm sure.
Yes, at that point, yeah.
Exactly.
Maybe not quite the knowledge I have now, but
yeah.
I did know I liked it.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And interestingly, tell me the next step in involving your decision to go to something I didn't know existed, beer school.
Oh, yeah. So I went to Siebel, and that was 2009. I had been homebrewing in Chicago with my roommate for a couple years, and I had saved up a bunch of money, and I decided to spend it all in beer school. And so I walked up to my, and that wasn't, like, I signed up for beer school at the beginning of 2009, but the school wasn't until September. So I go up to my boss. I'm like, hey, boss, sign up for beer school. I need 6 weeks unpaid leave. My boss was very jealous because he always wanted to go to beer school. But so, you know, and so he's like, all right, I have to clear with HR. I'm like, okay, whatever. But, you know, back in 2009, the economy had dropped. So come June, they laid off 10% of the workforce there. It's a flavor company I was working at the time. And so they laid me off, which is actually a good thing. It was a couple months beforehand, so I was able to do a couple internships, which, you know, it's basically fall around a brewer all day and just say, what do you need me today, boss? And, you know, they point me around and I move things. But then, yeah, I went to Siebel in Chicago Beer School, did the 6-week lecture course.
I guess people can imagine all kinds of things about the party at beer school, but there's a lot of science involved, right?
They broke it down really well, where it's like it's basically 3 2-week sections is what I was doing. And then, like, the first week would be mainly, like, your raw materials and wort production. Second part would be more fermentation, things like that, and yeast. And then the third part would be more packaging and cleaning and things like that. So, but it's, yeah, it was, fortunately, I had a degree in chemistry, so it wasn't completely over my head, but there are some guys there, it was just, like, way over their head.
It might be a struggle. I understand. So, so you finished beer school, and it's time to find one of the, I guess, limited number of jobs around the country for a brewer.
When I was, like, doing beer school, I set up a couple little, like, tours for, like, all the other, because I was living in Chicago at the time, so I knew some of the other breweries around there, and there are a lot of people from even outside the country. So I set up some tours, and one guy said, I remember, if you want to be get into the brewing industry, you need to be mobile, because there's always jobs out there. They just may not be jobs where you want there to be jobs. And so I, you know, blanket the earth with a resume, went on a couple interviews. Some I'm like, I don't know what the hell these people are trying to do here, but I finally get a call back from Lakefront Brewery in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It was kind of funny. It was the day before Thanksgiving back in 2009, day before Thanksgiving. And so I'm actually in Gary, Indiana. I get this call, and, you know, I'm happy as heck because now I'm about to go visit my family. And when they ask, hey, what have you been doing right now? And instead of saying I've been sitting around playing video games, I can tell them I just got a job at a brewery.
Yes.
exactly. Well, it's good to be able to impress the family. And it was, what, a couple of years later that the Gordon Beer Shop began?
Yes, yeah, so it was 2013. I was looking at, I'm from Cincinnati, so I was looking at closer to Cincinnati. And I saw this place, this job open, so, you know, I sent in a resume, did some phone interviews. I apparently was not the first person they tried to hire.
Yeah.
They tried to hire someone who just wanted to get the offer letter so they could get some more money from their employer. Then they tried to hire someone else who apparently they went down the street and got so drunk that he couldn't even remember Dave, the previous brewer's name, that afternoon when he walked by. So then they finally called me. And I came down here in a couple weeks, did some little training, took over Thanksgiving 2013, and been here ever since.
Wow. And right here on 4th Street Live, it's a great location. Tell me a little bit about what the day in the life of a brewer is.
Well, it's kind of dependent on what's going on a lot. Like Mondays, it can be a lot like, you know, basically number days. You just kind of see how much beer you went through and figure out what you're doing. But you're always like looking like weeks and months ahead because, you know, you can't just make beer tomorrow. So it's you kind of look ahead, see how much beer we're going through, what we can move around. And so it's depending on what day, it might be a brew day, it might be a dropping beer day. Sometimes you filter beer, sometimes you don't have to do that, which is makes it a lot easier. But then, it's cleaning too. Is it 90% cleaning, 10% paperwork? And then at the end day, you get a beer. It's a good day, you have two.
Well, it's a good day. We're having one right now. Yeah, so so that's pretty cool. Brewing operation, it's small. You're just making enough beer for this right restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's a lot different from larger operations.
Yeah, I've done the production thing, and I kind of like the more brew pub aspect. But, it's nice because, well, part of it is you really have to just kind of feel out what you think people are going to drink here in the next, like, you know, month or so. You don't really know exactly. I mean, it can fluctuate a bit, which can be a little difficult, but you know, if beer needs to sit up in a fermenter for another week, it'll be fine.
Okay. Well, this one's great. I'll tell you that.
Oh, thank you.
And I know that here at Gordon Beers, you guys are involved in a lot of local events, which is not true for a lot of national chains, right?
Well, we have tried here at this location, myself and Jason Smith, my GM, to try to get like more involved in the community. Like, I mean, we live here, we work here, and I know a lot of other GBs maybe hadn't, but like we both basically took over here. He took over as GM, I took over as brewer at the same time, and you know, just trying to do our own little thing. So I know one thing he started is Pints for Parkinson's, where I think we're doing that with our Maibach tapping this year, which will be mid-April. I don't know the exact date yet, but raise my we do Pints for Half Pints, where basically we'll do like $3 beers from like 6 to 9, and then next day just count how many of those beers we sold and just multiply by 3, write a check.
Oh, there you go. Well, I know those groups appreciate it and all that. I've seen you guys at some of the beer fests too. I know
It's something I've also been wanting to get into. Yeah, actually, it's kind of fun. We had for our last Pints for Parkinson's, we had a little silent auction. One was be a brewer for a day. And I thought it kind of interesting that the suggested retail value was $0. But I'm not bitter, whatever. Anyway, the winner was Tish Ganey, who's one of the people that runs Tailspin.
Sure.
And so we made up a Belgian double. And I also, basically when I made that, I also put some in some bourbon barrels. And they've been sitting in back there for about 5 months now. And I'm going to take them out sometime next month, carbonate them up. So we'll have that actually for Tailspin, too. Uh-huh. But yeah, it's always try to have some fun, like try to go out to the festivals and all that. And yeah, it's right now it's kind of slow, but come springtime and basically through all of August, and it's
kind of starts with Tailspin. I know there's a lot going on. You guys, beer as a, there's so many new breweries and beers around. I mean, I guess that means more jobs for people like you, or
yeah, that's true. Part of it, it's like I'm trying to think, how many breweries are there now? There's over 4,000 breweries, I think, in the United States right now. It's the most we've ever had, at least since we've counted.
Yeah.
It's more breweries, but obviously you're not going to be big breweries. So yes, you will have more job opportunities out there. But it also, I think, is, if I were to open up a brewery, I would go more the brew pub route. because you want to sell on-site, because with so many breweries up opening up, you're also, like, tap spaces. Like, bars only have so many taps. And, like, and not everyone's like Hopcat that has, like, 100 taps. So, like, yeah, most places might only have about, like, 10 taps or something. So just trying to get yourself in there.
As a community for beer, since you've been around a little bit in Milwaukee and Cincinnati, how does Louisville stack up?
It's growing quickly. Yes, it's basically like, I'd say it's almost like in the teenage years right now.
Okay.
Even when I got here like 3 years ago, I think there's probably been at least almost 10 breweries open up just in this area in the last 3 years. And even Kentucky as a whole is basically about triple the amount of breweries. So a lot of it was like helping, like they've opened up a lot of the laws, like some of the old archaic laws and distribution things. But it's growing up quickly. I'd say it's getting into its teenage years right now. Like the Brewers Guild is really starting to get its own at the moment. And when I first came here 3 years ago, I went to a meeting. It might be their even second meeting ever. Mm-hmm. And it was basically just like, you know, just a bunch of ragtag brewers barely knowing what the heck we're doing. But it's growing real fast. Now the last meeting I went to, we had at Monic, and their upstairs area was completely filled.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of people like making the breweries here in Kentucky.
Yeah, and is it people that drink beer drinking more beer or?
It's just better
selection.
Yeah, it's actually beer sales overall are down, but the craft beer sales are up. So like big guys like Budweiser and Miller, I think the only brand that really hasn't been hit is like of the big brands is Coors Light, but everything else is basically down except craft beer brands are growing.
I guess I'm a perfect example because I don't drink that shit anymore.
Yeah,
I drink this much better stuff.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So like the stuff you make here at Gordon Beer. Tell me about the volume here. You have a certain number of beers on tap.
We always try to go 8 to 10. Just kind of depends on how much space we have. I have 7 serving tanks and. Just depends, like a big game of Tetris down there, moving everything around. I try to have 7 to 10 or 8 to 10 on if I can, and been trying to do some more stuff with barrel aging too, getting those on. I got myself some more barrel racks. Since I am in Kentucky, basically started barrel aging things more. Like I asked forgiveness rather than permission, but the bosses were down with it, so they were cool with that. But yeah, it's just a. Always try to do that. I think last year our reported beer sales was actually 666 barrels, so I guess we're doing something right.
Well, there you go. That's a good number.
Yeah,
and a good number to end this interview on and drink some more beer.
Cheers,
Nicholas Landers. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for coming by. It's been fun.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.